Welcome to Nightlight. Step away from the mainstream and gather around as we enlighten the world and our realities and travel this cosmic journey we call life. Join us as we share with you and provide that beacon that can guide us all to a better way. Explore with us as we examine a metaphysical montage of spiritual insights, covering everything from the mundane to the magical, UFOs to unicorns, and everything in between. This is a time of awakening, of sharing and evolving, of spreading our wings and soaring on the cosmic breath of creation. Come and join with other light-minded spirits as we weave our lights together to seek understanding, enlightenment, and with a little luck, some wisdom. This is Nightlight, a reminder that you are never alone.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to Neon Twilight with Solaris Blue Raven, our hostess. It's going to be an exciting evening, and I know where we're going to start. I don't know where we're going to finish, but I know where we're going to start. but I want to make sure that I get Solaris's information out there. She does do two shows, one on KCOR and one on Freedom Slips Radio. And both of those shows are fascinating shows. She also has, I think, four books out, five maybe counting her Mr. Moon book, all of which are easy, profound, in-depth books to read. And they're the kind of book that you can go through and then you have to go back through it again and again and again and again because she does give you so much information. She is a wise, wise teacher and seeker, and it's an honor that she has decided to spend at least one night a month with us here, helping to bring some light into some of our lives anyhow. Tonight we're going to be talking about Egyptian mummification and really what its true purpose is and what sacred burial is and why. And that's where we're going to start out, and I hope you stick with us, because if you come in later, you'll never know where we started. So welcome to the show, Solaris.
Well, thank you, Barbara, and thank you for the beautiful introduction, as always. And, yeah, I look forward to our monthly gathering in connection to doing the show. It's so wonderful. And, yeah, it was a joy connecting with you, so thank you.
Well, it's always so much fun. You know, we know where we start, but we never end there. We've had a couple of shows where we almost got all the way through, but for some reason or other, we got slightly distracted and went off in another direction.
That explains why we're on this planet, right?
Well, it does, and, you know, it's interesting. Well, you know, it's kind of, you know, did you ever watch the movie Up? It's a cartoon.
Yes.
And the
dog
there,
so cute. Yes,
you know,
I did.
Squirrel. That's how I feel sometimes when we're doing a show. It's like we're cranking right along, and then suddenly squirrel. Lord knows what the squirrel is, we're off in another direction.
Yep.
And it doesn't.
Very
it
true.
Doesn't.
Well,
take,
that's okay.
But well, I think that's important because you know that means that both of us are certainly very open to going where spirit directs us instead of gritting our teeth and saying, nope, we're talking about this and we're not going anywhere else.
Right, exactly. So, yeah, we're nebulous, I think. Yeah.
I would say that...
I like that.
Yeah, I think we're very in the flow, so to speak, and so long as it's not a squirrel, we're fine. But
that's right.
Well, I don't know if you suddenly said to me, guess what, they found a treasure on Oak Island, I would be off onto Googling what the heck it was. So Yeah,
oh,
for
sure.
10 years.
Yeah. Speaking of which, I guess I'll have to look later. No, I was kidding.
You know, I have followed that show for 10 years, and I just know, I know absolutely if I quit following it, they'll find something.
Wow.
So.
Well, you put it out there now, so we'll hear from it probably in about a week or so, right?
No, no, if I stop watching, then that's when they'll find something. So,
oh, okay.
And I can't stand not watching because I don't want to miss it if they really do find something.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's with archaeology, they found a lot of good stuff. It's just that they haven't found a treasure chest full of gold and, or the Ark of the Covenant or, you know, the chandelier from the Great Temple or, you know all of the things they have said that they were going to have on, that they were hopeful were going to be there.
Well, not that they're telling us about anyways.
Well, it makes for great advertisement.
Mm-hmm.
But tonight, we're focusing on Egyptian mummification and its true purpose. And, you know, it's such a long process. It takes about a month or so to actually mummify a body, or more than that.
Mm-hmm. I believe so. What's interesting about it to me was this, the reason I wanted to do this topic is it's like, what was the obsession with immortality, first of all? We all know we're immortal beings and energy beings and spirit, soul, consciousness. But to them, the body was very significant insofar as protecting or mummifying it to such a degree that it would be, I guess it seems like it would be accessible for the afterlife, which to me doesn't make a whole lot of sense. And I guess I'd like your feedback on that, because if you want to preserve the body like that and you're in another realm of consciousness, I mean, what would you want with your physical matrix here? You know?
Well, I do believe that the philosophy was that, you know, the tubes that went out to the outside were where the spirit could go and then come back, so that they knew that there was a spirit in the body, and they did preserve. I found it fascinating that they preserved organs, but they didn't preserve the brain.
Right. Yeah, that stood out with me too. Yeah.
You know, it's kind of like, yeah, you need a heart and a liver and stuff like that, but without the brain, how do you animate? And, of course, I guess they're figuring that if you're immortal and that you don't need the brain anymore because your spirit is then in total control and there's no consciousness to debate it.
Right.
I guess.
Exactly. Well, and also
and
the idea behind it. Oh, go ahead.
And they put the little statues in there to serve, and let's face it, those little statues couldn't lift a tray. So were the little statues supposed to suddenly pop into full-size people to serve the pharaoh when he was animated again?
Yeah, it almost sounds like a ritual, and of course the energetic signature would probably go into the field, you know, the ether, wherever they're navigating to. But what never made sense to me, even if that was to preserve the body for their spiritual afterlife with the mummification, you know, the physical body is there and it's mummified, and honestly, do you really want to revisit your corpse, I guess is the question. And I found that to be kind of backwards for so-called advanced civilization. I understand the mystery school consciousness aspect, but to me it seems like it doesn't make a lot of sense why you'd want to do that with a vessel that literally will never be reanimated unless it becomes a zombie of some kind. Or maybe there's a regeneration aspect that we don't know about where they could actually regenerate the entire matrix of the body itself to a point where it's just like it is, you know, before it died.
Well, theoretically, it crossed the River Styx or whatever, you know, goes for the River Styx in Egypt. And so it went to wherever spirits go, then why would the spirit want to come back? And why would they put food in the tomb if it's immortal and dead and it doesn't need food?
Right, I agree. Unless that's to appease the, well, I don't want to say entities, but maybe some spirits around. There may be the aspect of maybe the causal body or something, that's some aspect of the body that's still lingering to maybe appease it so that it can navigate and move on.
Or maybe to feed the people they seal in the tomb to serve the king, you know, until they die. I mean,
right?
But no, it doesn't make sense to me either. And there are such rituals connected to it that in all of the history of the Egyptian gods that I have, that I'm aware of, and it doesn't mean I'm aware of everything, but the ones that I am, none of their gods were ever mummified. None of their gods ever died, really. Well, they died, but then they came back, and they were full, they were healthy, and they were functional, and, you know, they were restored to their physicality. But, you know, when you take pieces of the body out, what's the point of reanimating it when, you know, you have all the Coptic jars there with all the, you know, vital organs in them? They're all wrapped up like crazy, and they've been stuffed with salt to absorb all the moisture out of the body. So, I mean, who would want, I mean, of course, I guess they never saw what a mummy looked like after about 100 years. So, to be reanimated that way, to me, would not be, I wouldn't be desirous of coming back to something that was, you know, that dried and brown and, you know, worn out and empty.
Right, so, exactly. No, I see it like that, too. Even cryogenics would be better than that. I mean, there's a potential to resurrect to some degree, you know, if you have advanced technologies, but it doesn't make sense. Yeah, I kind of reminds me of the movie The Mummy, you know, where he gets reconstituted, but it's always like a zombification of what they were. And I think it was like 70 days or something like that. So it does take a while when they're doing the mummification, if I'm not mistaken. But still, to me, I feel like I always look at the pyramid, especially the Great Pyramid, as a place where you can transmute alchemically, but also it's like the transmutational aspect, alchemy of the soul and the spirit, where the light body to Merkaba, I mean, like they talk about the Hulk of Amenti, you could traverse the galactic highway, but you're not physically dead. So I look at this very differently insofar as what started this whole idea behind the preservation of the mummy itself. And it's interesting, you know, when I started looking into it.
Yeah, but, you know, look at what else they mummified. They mummified cats. They mummified dogs. They mummified bulls, for Pete's sake. So, where, why? You know, I'm going to think, you know, where do bulls go when they're dead? I mean, I do believe they have souls, but you know, you brought this up, and the more I've thought about it, the more I think of, you know, it's just downright dumb. Why did they do this? And
I agree. Yeah. I don't think it's as evolved as people would think it is. It just doesn't resonate on that level. And like I said, initially when we go to the museums and we see the mummies and we see, you know, and of course they have the adornment and the gold, and it's so pretty. And you think of it as, well, respecting the dead, respecting that being, and then doing something to honor that person while they're dead, you know, like we have ceremonies for and funerals, this, that, and the other. So I can imagine they're doing something spectacular to preserve and honor that physical body. But still, there's something strange about it. And I think you're right. The whole idea that they didn't think the brain was useful is just like, what? I mean, to me, they're supposedly, I know they did not build the pyramids, but my idea behind this is, what? Your brain is not worth anything? Of course it is. So, and I get the heart, you know, the aspects of the heart, and that's the center. A lot of people see the heart as more prominent than the brain itself, but still, very interesting.
Well, and when you stop to think of it, they cut out the vital organs, but they took the brain out through the nose.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They could easily have just hacked off the back of the head and sucked it out.
True.
Because there was nobody going to use that body ever again. But so if it was, you know, fast forward to Christianity and resurrection and, you know, what we do after, you know, someone has gone, we recognize the spirit is no longer there. They, the Egyptians, recognized that a spirit or the ka, I think it's the ka, it's a two-letter word, I think it's the ka, leaves the body and is judged. So so the ambulatory part of the corpse is gone. And secondly, there have been no mummies discovered in pyramids.
Correct.
So the pyramids
right.
were really not part of the whole burial thing.
I agree with that.
I mean,
totally.
The tombs were. So, and the tombs were to provide, you know, a home, I guess, for the spirit, because the spirit would come and go. I think there was something about, I know what I read. I read that the spirit, you know, was free to go and be judged mm-hmm. and everything else. But unless the body was there, it couldn't return to Earth.
That makes sense. Yeah, I think we had that discussion before, and that makes perfect sense to me, because if you don't have a body to reanimate, or even it's like a tether, in my opinion, the biosuit and the skeleton and the bones, if it's here, physically buried or something, I think it's definitely more anchored and tethered to the earth versus being more liberated from this world. So that would make sense to me. And it does seem like they were obsessed with reanimating the body. In other words, they learned it from somewhere that there was a way to reanimate, but I don't think they had it right. That's another aspect of it as well. And that could have been from the visitors, you know, that they just were inspired enough to do something similar but really didn't get it. But it's interesting, the whole procedure insofar as what they were doing. And they did learn a lot from what I understand on the medical level insofar as the organs and this, that, and the other. But it's just, it gives you a whole different perspective on the burial and what that was about. But to me, it would create more of an earthbound entity for sure, because it's not allowing it to move on.
But, if that was the case, you'd have a whole bunch of old pharaohs walking around Egypt.
Well, who's to say we don't have entities wandering around like that?
Well, that's
spirits
true, too.
Of the dead. I think we do have a lot of spirits of the dead.
Well, we do, but I don't think they're ghosts and haunting people. I think, I believe spirits come back to check on stuff.
Possible.
I would almost swear. I have a grandmother who died at 89. She was up there, and she was a very prim and proper New Englander, and she was in the DAR. And when I was 3 years old, she joined me into the CAR, and I have been a member ever since. And my mother said, "What did you do with the pen?" You know, for the DAR, because I have it. And I said, I keep it and I keep my membership active because I know my grandmother will come and haunt me if I cancel it.
Oh, that's great. Well, she probably
and
would,
I believe that. I believe I would see the specter of my grandmother someplace if I ever decide to not pay those dues.
Wow.
But, I mean, it doesn't scare me, but I don't want to see it anyhow.
Right. Well, I think that's true. The whole idea behind love never dies as long as you remember the being, right, the person. And I think that's what it's about. It's about how your mind is syncing up with the spirit of the dead and bringing them into your realm. And I think that's, it's esoteric insofar as ritual. That's how we do it with ritual. But that is the idea behind keeping them in your thought and your psyche, so that there's an interaction there. There's a connection there that still cannot be severed. At least it seems that way with me. And it seems like most of that is established through the heart and the emotional body on a lot of levels.
Yeah. And if you think about it, too, the walls of the tombs were covered with the lifetime of the person that died.
Mm-hmm.
So in a way, does that person have to be reminded of his earthly existence and come back and be reminded so that he can walk around? And that may well be the purpose of that.
Highly possible. And that, like I said before, it's almost like a tether. It almost keeps them more encapsulated into that realm. And the idea behind them being in a place where it's more buried, like a place where they're, to me, I don't know, I'm a free spirit, so I don't like that aspect of just being put away somewhere in a room that's really dark, even if there's a lot of pictures and this, that, and the other. I don't know, just something about it doesn't resonate. But that's just me on a spirit level. But for me, I'm just like, move on and just be part of that cosmic ocean. Versus linger around and watch there is a review, in my opinion, I think there is a review people go through, just like a reflection of where they've been on the timeline, but then they move on, and there's nothing persecution and judgment, although when it comes to the Egyptian belief systems, it seems like they were more convinced that there was, you did have to weigh the soul to some degree, and the actions of the soul, and, if you didn't make it out, then I guess earthbound or reincarnated to some degree.
No, I think you went. You were sent to their equivalent of hell, I think.
Right. Well, exactly, the abyss. So wouldn't that be Earth? No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but it's all based on your belief system. So it's, once again, it's given to you according to your beliefs. And if the person who transferred out didn't believe in any of that, then I imagine they would break that paradigm up. But it's just like, this is what I mean by the encapsulation of a thought form and how powerful it can be for when you're navigating, even after you die. That's why I think people should be very clear on what they're doing while they're here and also when they leave. Like mausoleums,
well,
this is another thing. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, yeah, and mausoleums are, there's a place in New York where it's the most beautiful park ever, and it's where Woolworth is buried, where Marge and Gower Champion are buried, where and some of the mausoleums are, they're churches. They're huge.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't see a point in that. I mean, stained glass windows and the whole thing.
Wow, are they? This is another thing I never really understood. Well, go ahead.
No, it's like, why spend money like that when no one's going to enjoy it?
Exactly. Well, another thing is, would you like to be buried with a bunch of strangers? Because I sort of think about things in cemetery. I know this is a strange thought, right? But think about it. Everybody's like, oh, it's so peaceful in the cemetery. But really, you're buried with a bunch of strangers unless you're in the Masonic area or someplace that's designated, right? And to me, it just seems kind of weird. I don't know. It just seems kind of odd that you're just put in the ground with a bunch of people you don't even know. And everybody, you know, I don't know. There's a strangeness to the whole process of burial and what they do to me.
Well,
it just seems weird.
I think cemeteries are the best place in the world to have a picnic because there's no spirits there. No spirit is going to just hang around by their grave. They're going to go find what the living are doing. So and they're not anchored to their grave. So there are no spirits there. I have yet to be in a cemetery where I saw a spirit.
Right.
I see them
everywhere
else. I see them everywhere else, but they're not in cemeteries. So, mm-hmm. You know, it is peaceful and park-like to, you know, if it's a nice mm-hmm. cemetery. And you know, I always kind of, if I'm going to do a picnic or whatever, I put it close to an old grave so I can say, oh, this is my great-great-grandma. I've come to pay my respects. And, you know, not knowing who the heck it is, but just in case somebody comes up and says, what are you doing? I'm visiting
Grandma. Well, you know, a lot of people have picnics on, they celebrate their ancestors. Well, I know they do it like the Day of the Dead, but the idea behind celebrating your ancestors and having a picnic or... But it's more for them, for having emotional connection versus the being that's, you know, supposedly preserved underground. I mean, like you said, there's nobody there. I mean, there's a resonance, and in my opinion, the bones themselves are resonators for communication, just like the ancient skulls. We talked about crystal skulls before, but to me, that is a connection to a different realm of the supernatural, where we can access our ancestors or something more. So the bones themselves, in my opinion, do have that frequency and resonance to be able to communicate. As a medium, almost. That's just my take on it.
Well, they do, but isn't the spirit just as easy to connect to?
For us, it is, yeah. But some people don't look at it like that.
I mean...
I agree.
I need a thread, usually, to get to somebody. Someone asked me to, could I tune into, I forget who it was, somebody really famous. And I said, no, I don't have a thread to that person. And it's sort of like my friend Jeannie, you know, I can connect to her father or her grandmother because I have the thread through her and her family to get to the energy of that spirit.
Mm-hmm.
But I have no thread to get through to Abraham Lincoln. No
mm-hmm.
connection,
although you're
trying
to get enough to dial in. Right, you don't have to know it, but you could get into the energetic, I'm sure.
Yeah,
just
but I'm looking for
without being.
I'm looking for an excuse sometimes not to be able to get into people.
No, I don't blame you. And anyways, what do you want to do with that anymore? Because that's an old timeline. I mean, that's already, most of the time, a lot of that gets transmuted alchemically. Although the more people fixate on the past, the more they manifest it. So once again, it's you know, that's another aspect of it.
Well, and what I don't think people understand, and this is only my perspective, yours may be different, and they're both right, but if I'm connecting to someone, say who crossed away 15 years ago, and a family member wants to talk to them and ask questions about here, their frame of reference stopped at their death.
Mm-hmm.
So they can't give you any information or opinions of anything that happened after they died.
Yeah, I tend to correct. I agree with that. They move on. Supposedly they move on. And this is my point, is that a lot of people are obsessed with their ancestors that have passed on. I mean, some people just can't let go, and you can honor them as they moved on. But I think that it's good to let them move, energetically speaking. And most of the time people get their answers, you know this as well as I did, through their higher self, their oversoul, through creator source. I mean, there are other methods of getting information without going through an ancestor, unless you're looking for a vault somewhere with some money in it. Which, of course, I think you did do something like that. Did you do a reading for someone like that or no?
I did. It's funny. I had a spirit circle in, Richmond, Virginia. And there were two sisters there, and their father had died. And I came to them and I said, there's somebody standing right between the two of you, and they seem to be connected to the two of you, and they're spitting mad. And they looked at each other and say, "That's Daddy," and it was, and so he was angry at them because they had not buried him in the suit he wanted to be buried in. And they said, "Well, we gave that suit to a friend," which made their father even angrier. And I said, and I described to them the suit that he was buried in. And they said, "Yeah, it was old, and he didn't even wear it anymore. And we figured, who cares? We couldn't even give it to Goodwill." And so I did still for a while, and I heard their father laugh, and I said, "Well, the joke's on you. You've been looking for the key to the safety deposit box, right?" And they said, "Yes." I said, "It's in the vest of the man you gave it to."
So ironic.
And it wasn't. And they said, "Well, how can we make Daddy happy?" And I said, "Send him a suit." And they said, "Well, he was cremated." I said, "Send it to him." And they said, "How?" I said, "Burn it."
Mm-hmm.
And yep. So they did.
Yeah,
but,
very good. That's awesome.
on
the money.
I always got really cool stuff in spirit circles. It was always so much fun.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a blast, yeah. And that's something you organized?
I did it in bookstores. If I was doing readings there during the day, we would have a spirit circle at night, and I would do the spirit circle, and then I would give messages to everybody from relatives, or if there was no relative there, from a message of some sort.
Mm-hmm. That's so nice.
But it was a lot of fun.
I like that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Cool.
It was definitely one of the fun things I did. I used to do meditations and then give everybody a message, and the store owner said once, after I'd been there for 5 years or something like that, and she said, "Do you do anything else?" And I said, "Well, I do spirit circles, but I can't imagine anybody would want to see one of those." And they asked, and I described it. And after I did one, the store owner came up and said, "You're never doing meditations again. You have to do just the spirit circles." So.
Oh, nice. Very good.
Yeah, they were fun.
Wonderful. Yeah, sounds great. And, of course, people probably needed that, too.
Oh yeah, no, it was mm-hmm. It was fun because everybody's life was just, I can remember one couple, a girl and her boyfriend, and you could tell that he didn't believe in any of it and she wasn't real sure. And so I came to her and I said, "Your father's here." And they looked at each other like, "Yeah, right." And I said to her, "He's really upset that you didn't keep swimming." And the boyfriend looked at her and said, "What about swimming? You don't swim." And she said, Well, yeah, kind of. I did kind of. And he said, what do you mean kind of? She said, well, I tried out for the Olympics.
Bless you. There you go. Yep, right on. Right
yeah.
on.
Yeah, they're fun. But,
yeah.
but, you know.
And accurate.
Yeah, no, I always had a lot of fun with that. And, you know, things would happen, like all the wind chimes in the store would suddenly go off. And, you know, it was, you know, there was spiritual energy there.
Affirmation.
You know, of course.
Right.
Yeah. Of course cool stuff
happens.
That's
so happens. Nice. You know, that's like the good old days, too. I don't know if that can be, I mean, obviously you can conjure that up anywhere, but nowadays it's so different. You know, I remember the old days in the magical bookstores that were just so unique, and that's before we had all the internet stuff going on. You have flyers, you know. Yeah, it just changes the whole dynamic. It's very, very interesting. But, yeah, that's so neat.
Yeah,
very,
the good old
nice.
Days were good old days. They were a lot of fun. And,
oh, they were, yeah.
Although I
magic
don't
is
think
always
I would
fun.
Want it.
Spirit's fun.
You know, I don't think I would want to go back to reading in bookstores again or
mm-mm,
anything like
no,
that.
No,
no.
But, I paid my dues there, too.
Well, you know, it is paying your dues. I mean, I worked psychic fairs, too. And while they were exhausting, I learned how to, you know, when a bell rings, you stop, and a bell rings, and, you know, you go. I mean, to do 15 minutes readings, and there's no time in between for a change. So you are closing up and saying goodbye and hi and spreading the cards for another person. So, and that's a skill that you don't get unless you're pressured into it.
Yeah, exactly. Totally.
But,
yeah.
But,
awesome,
yeah, no, those definitely. And I, you know, I don't know. I know there are still metaphysical bookstores. I don't know if they have readers in them or not. But
they do. Yeah, there are some here in Denver. They do that. They have, I think it's Isis Books, you know, Goddess Isis Books. She has one store that has readers there. But this just seems so old school, you know. I don't know. It's cute, but I wouldn't want to do that again like that. No.
No. And you know, I don't think I have ever paid for a reading. You know, I would trade readings with other readers, but but you know, it's really funny when I came to a point where it was like, why don't people realize they have control of their own lives and just take care of it themselves?
Right.
Why would you want to go to a stranger and ask the stranger questions about your most private life?
Well, you look at therapists. It's the same thing. I mean, you have people who, you know, whatever you want to call them, therapists that they go to for information. But, yeah, sometimes they trust spirit, you know, readers more than they do the therapist. Therapist is more psychological, and the spirit readers are usually more spiritual. Not all of them, but I guess that's why.
But even readers can only read from their own level of perspective. And how do you tell where a reader is, you know, spiritually? I mean, that's a hard one.
I agree. I think they're desperate, too. I remember back in the day, people would come in frantic. I mean, they would be coming in so disoriented and really just flipped out about, I don't know what, you know, not even important stuff. But I think a lot of it has to do with just teaching them how to meditate, how to tune into their higher selves. And, you know, a lot of that is now what we, you know, beings like us teach. And I think that they're getting it now, especially on the internet. There's no excuse not to be able to find information if you're really willing to look for it, books and whatever else is out there, you know.
Oh, yeah. No, I had one lady who called me once, and she was panicked. She was crying. And she said, I you know, I found your name. I saw you on the internet. I looked you up. You feel like you're really honest and sincere. And I said, well, I should hope so, but what's wrong? And she said, you have to help me, please. I'm desperate. And I said, well, I'll try, but, you know, what's the problem? And I hope you're sitting down. And anybody who's listening, she said, I tore my aura. And the psychic I usually go to fix it is out of town. And I said, you tore your aura. How does she fix it? Well, she sews it back together. And I said, and is that expensive? And she said, no, no, it's only $500 to sew it back together.
Wow.
And I said, well, I don't sew auras, but I do put them back together so that they will never rip again. It's a special spell, so they can't be ripped by any force on heaven or earth. And she said, is that more money? And I said, no. And she said, can you do that for me? And I said, I'll do it for you if you'll promise me something. And she said, anything. I said, you'll never go back to the lady who said she could sew your aura together. She said, okay, do it. And so I mumbo-jumboed it, and I said, okay, it's all set, and I have your right address. And she gave me the address, and I said, and that's where you are right now, because that's where this spell is going, but it's going in the ether. And she said, okay, mm-hmm. okay. And I said, now close your eyes and take a deep breath. And she did, and I said, okay, it's there. She said, I felt it. And she said, mm-hmm. I said, well, that's good. I said, I just want you to know there's a lifetime guarantee. It will never, ever tear again. It cannot be destroyed. She said, really? I said, absolutely. And she said, how much? And I said, pay it forward. Whatever it was worth to you, pay it forward to any one of the charities that you like. Mm-hmm. But if you don't pay it forward, it'll dissolve. And I got a I got a nasty letter from the one who sewed her aura.
I never even heard of that before. I mean, I understand repairing the field, but sewing?
It's a great con. It's a great con.
Well, remember the old days? They still had this. I mean, there are some charlatans out there. Remember the ones that would actually tell you to leave so much money in a cemetery for their ancestors or something? I don't know if that's real or not, but I remember hearing stories about all that. Do you remember
it's
that or not?
It's very real. I have a surrogate daughter who's a single practitioner. And she went to somebody, and they told her this, and she put $500 in a can, buried it where she was told, and came back home and called me and said, I think I did something stupid. And she told me, and I said, go get it. And she called me back. She said, it's gone.
You know what I would have done? Put a Monopoly $500 in there.
No, she put $500. She put $500 in cash there.
On Jiminy. Wow. That's crazy.
It happens.
Wow. Yeah, I remember hearing about that. Yeah.
It's true.
Yeah. Well, this is another thing, you know, getting into the mummy thing. I know we must have seen a squirrel, but but the mummification thing too. I mean, were they afraid to that degree where they wanted to mummify? That's another aspect of it. And also, it just seems like, what about curses? What about curses in general? I know you and I kind of take, I don't really believe in curses. I think it's the power of the mind. But in your opinion, what do you think? What's your take on all that?
Well, you know, I think they were almost panicked that something would happen to the mummy. So it had to have there were pharaohs whose bodies were taken out of their tombs and hidden in another place so that their bodies couldn't be destroyed. So there was something about the physicality of it that was needed in order, I guess, for them to come back into this realm. But, you know, even if they did, let's face it, that mummy couldn't walk around. It was tied up tight.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, what about grave robbing, too? I think that was another thing they were probably more worried about. It would sound like it anyway. You know, the aspect of the grave robbers coming in and trying to take something. And then there was also, go ahead.
Yeah, they were buried with a lot of jewelry interwoven in the wrappings. So they did, obviously, the thieves that, you know, did the grave robbing didn't believe in those curses or those superstitions.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then the other aspect of the tongues, I think, were removed and then replaced with pieces of so-called gold or something in that. So that's another aspect that would be intriguing for people to rip off. I mean, you have thieves around. But isn't that interesting how the whole ritual is just, I mean, think about what they do to, it's almost like desecrating the body versus preserving it.
Oh, definitely they desecrated it. But how about the habit of, and I think this goes, I'm not sure where this goes back to. My background is New England, so it may be back that far or further, that they used to put money on the eyelids to pay the guy who was going to take you across the River Styx. I don't know how far goes. But it goes back a good distance. So even though it's superstition, it's fresh enough superstition so people will follow it just in case it's true.
Right. Well, everybody has a lucky penny, you know, that kind of thing. Or you see a penny, pick it up, or even the fountain aspect. I mean, the whole idea behind throwing a coin in the fountain and making a wish, right?
And
kind of superstitious, but fun.
I'm not sure how much they put on the eyelids, but it was whatever the fare was to get across the river. And I wonder, did anybody say, I don't have the money, I'm going to swim? I mean, again,
yeah, really.
Stories that I'm saving the money myself and I'll just swim for it. But, you know, the stories and everything, I wonder if they're real stories or they're just myths that have been made up.
I agree. Or even when somebody's in an altered state of consciousness, whether it's through some kind of a drug or hallucinogen or just basically they're just in another universe. But, yeah, highly possible. And then, like I said, and with all the spiritual work beings like us do, to me it just feels like energy and consciousness. There's none of this drama that people think is like the persecution and this and that. And to me, it just feels like navigation. You just go and you just navigate and it's a smooth sail. But that's just the way I look at things, energetically speaking. But I think the more people fixate on this ritual aspect of it, and I come from backgrounds where we did ritual, but it wasn't like we were doing it in a weird belief system way. We were doing it more theatrical. But I can say it. I find it to be just energy and consciousness in the end, and that a lot of this stuff isn't really necessary unless it's just something that the people that are doing it need to do to release something in themselves.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people on the show, probably within the last 6 months, that have talked about what happens when we die, and basically it's death to one level of existence, but birth into another, so that it's not really death, and it's you know, they spoke of how as humans we are living in a three-dimensional world that is really a holographic projection of a two-dimensional world where our soul really is, and that we have one foot in two dimensions and one foot in three dimensions, and that at death we go back into the two-dimensional realm.
Well, I guess that depends on where you come from. I see it more that we're multidimensional, so I don't see it as two dimensions at all. But that just, I guess it just depends on perspective. But it does make sense in the sense of you're transmuting alchemically and you're moving to the next level depending on your vibratory rate and your state of consciousness and what kind of work you've done. And it doesn't mean you're hardcore, you know, spiritualist, but just the idea behind being, understanding the cosmos and your relationship as a co-creator. I think, to me, that's how that resonates, but I can't speak for everybody. But, and this is another thing, we've talked about this before. Well, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, the idea behind death is really, in my opinion, a very bad program, because I believe we're immortal beings, and if we were in the right space-time configuration, we'd be living over not necessarily 3,000 years, but at least 1,000 years old. So the idea behind having to die and this whole aspect of decay and dying and the ceremony behind it, in my opinion, I think it's opposite of what the cosmos is really about. I think it's more about infinite energy and immortality on a very high level. And depending on the frequencies, we wouldn't have to do that.
I agree. And you know, the reality here is that our body is just traveling in an avatar. We don't need the avatar.
Right.
You know, we've become very accustomed to it, but it really is not us. So it's sort of like you step out of a vibration that in many ways restricts you into a greater vibration where you are not restricted and you're able to breathe again and move into new levels of awareness. And kind of shake it off and get uncramped, because in the etheric realm, we have no form or shape, which I love. You know, no spirit looks at another spirit and says, "Have you put on a few pounds there?" You know,
a lot of plasma there.
What happened to your plasma?
Right.
But you know, it's kind of like we are in many ways imprisoned by our egos and this avatar that we've got that we're walking around in. And
yeah,
I think
it's programming.
And I think one of the things with all the writing I'm doing, it's kind of like our ego and the spirit within often have a wrestling match. Now, the spirit always wins, but the ego tries to control this reality, and you know, it can't, because that restricts our growth. So So it's kind of an interesting concept that they have these huge edifices for dead people, and you know, there are people that are homeless and living in the desert. That doesn't make sense to me.
Right. Yeah. Well, I agree. Well, nowadays they have the other aspect of there's none of this going on. Well, actually, you can get, in my opinion, if I'm not mistaken, I think they do mummification for like $67,000. Is that where I read about? But that's, I don't know if anybody want to be mummified, you know, but it is still being done by eccentrics, probably people who want that sort of thing. You know, part of me thought, well, it'd be cool to be shot into space, you know, but I'm just kind of strange like that. But yeah, I don't know. It's very interesting, that whole idea behind the process itself. And yeah, I agree with you, though. People transfer out every day. Animals transfer out every day. And the energy and consciousness moves on, supposedly, unless they're earthbound to some degree.
What would cause someone to be earthbound?
I would say it has to be entanglement, some hardcore issue where they've been entangled and tethered here.
I mean, when you stop to think, the soul, the spirit, is eternal.
Mm-hmm.
And that is released at the moment of death. So why would it be earthbound? It would seem to me it would just zip right off.
It should. Well, you know, that's a good point you make, unless there's some aspect, like maybe an after image that just lingers, and maybe it's not earthbound at all, but just didn't catch up, or maybe it was disconnected from the other aspect of the spirit soul, so that there was there's like a split. Maybe one aspect remained and the other part went on. I'm just theorizing. You know, anything can happen. I have heard about earthbound spirits before.
Well, yeah, I have too, and I just can't figure out what binds them when, first of all, the body is clay. It's just an avatar, so the body dissipates eventually. So what would hold the spirit?
Maybe the will, to be part of a family again, or the will to be connected to a loved one, obsession, insanity. Psychological damaging. I don't know. I'm just speculating, but it could be a lot of things. You know, you've heard about spiritual hauntings where one always hovers around the other one. So who knows? I mean, I think that could be a possibility, but for me, I think break orbit, you know, just break orbit. Don't linger. Keep navigating and ascending, but that's just me, you know.
I'm out of here.
Don't waste your rocket fuel lingering here and looking around on memory lane, you know. Get out, go. That's my motto anyway, in a nice way.
So. Yeah, it's my friend Jeannie's motto too. She says she's going home, and I keep saying to her, "Well, you just keep picturing it, and that's where you're going to go."
It's kind of like those ruby slippers.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And that's true too. And you have to be careful, because the mind will create a fabric for you. And if it's not a really true fabric connected to the true, what I call the full light universe, then it might be something that you don't want to, that's not your destination. So to me, and that's why I like the aspect of being co-creator to source, where we're navigating as partners. We're not, I'm always connected to creation, so I won't be, you know, disoriented or go someplace I'm not supposed to go. At least that's why I look at it.
I can't believe there's some place not to go. To me, it seems that a lot of the negative things that we've heard have been given to us to scare us into believing a different set of rules, you know, and, mm-hmm. you know, if you don't do this, you're damned to hell. Well, I don't believe there's hell. So,
I agree. Totally. Or limbo, or the other one. Even heaven, I mean, heaven can be boring if it's just a bunch of people you don't know. What exactly is heaven? I mean, I get it, like bliss and happiness and eternal love, however you want to define it. But the idea behind some people's version of heaven is like, really, you want to stay the rest of your days like that? That doesn't work for me. So I'm just beyond this. And I think that if any place I shouldn't have entered on, and I must say this, I know you don't resonate with it, but this world to me is just like, it was an accident. I should pray.
Well, I think a lot of people think heaven is a celestial rest home, and I don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's a it's more or less it's a stopping over place where, you know, mm-hmm. okay, this is what you expected. Here it is. Now move on. And you know, it's just it's like a way station. It's
mm-hmm.
not the
Stay
end
mind.
Trip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree.
So
I totally agree with that.
I know Patrick
but that's, once again,
had a
how many
concept.
Centuries? Oh, go ahead.
Oh, jeez. Mm-hmm. No, Patrick had a concept of where we went when we died, and you know, I said to him, "It's really pretty, but it's very restricting and very, you know." And he, after he finished telling me about it, he said, "You know, I better change that because it actually is."
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So,
be open.
Yeah, and yet it's funny because I've only felt his presence once, and he died in 2012, so that's 11 years ago. Although there are moments, you know, if I'm doing an interview or something like that and someone asks me a biblical question, I almost immediately have the answer, and I don't have the
mm-hmm.
biblical training for it. So, you know, he must be around there someplace just waiting for an opportunity to, you know, have
sure.
me say something that's intelligent.
Yeah, well, that totally makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's funny because I've talked to people, and I've actually know two of my relatives who've had, my mother had a near-death experience when she was a little girl. And she said she saw a city of gold, and she saw angels, and she saw all kinds of heavenly things, and then she heard her mother calling her back. Now, is that just based on belief system, religious indoctrination, or is it something more? And then my other sister who had a near-death experience, she saw Jesus, or what she said she saw Jesus. Now, is that another thing where she is very spiritual like that, but is it just based on beliefs or is it something more? So you have to look at it on those levels too. You know, what's going on?
Well, I think it's very real for them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
I'm not sure if it happened to me, that would be my perception of what I would see.
Mm-hmm.
You never know until you go
mm-hmm.
through it and then you can't come back and tell everybody, well, no, this is what I saw, you know, but that was my experience. So,
mm-hmm. Right. Isn't it interesting how they always tell you to come back, too? And not to cut you off, I'm sorry, I mean to do that. But the idea behind they always telling them to go, it's not your time. Well, what the hell did you have an accident for? Why were you in between realms anyway? I'm sorry, I could be a real grumpy kind of guardian if I was in between there watching over somebody, but think about that. It's always, oh, it's not your time, but they're there and they want to stay in this blissful mode of heavenly consciousness or whatever it is. And then it's always, they've always got to come back.
Well, they're being sent back with a message. I think almost everybody that I have spoken to that had a near-death experience has come back with a desire to serve, to be kinder to people, to contribute to society in a better way. I mean, very few people have come back and
mm-hmm.
gone back to negative, you know, unhealthy ways. They're all changed
mm-hmm.
in some
right.
way, shape, or form. And it may not be a huge change, but they are changed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes sense. And they're bringing part of that field back with them, too. And that probably changes the whole DNA and the state of consciousness. So, yeah, it makes sense. Definitely makes sense on that level.
But you know, that same experience is not the same as people who have been or have who say they have experienced abductions either.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, right. Yeah, that's more experimental. I mean, yeah, I don't think it's very positive. Or what's your take?
No, I don't think it's very positive either. I think that I'm not sure I here's where I am today. I doubt it with a lot of things. And and I would say I doubt it with probably 75% of the abduction people. I don't think they're lying. I think they believe what they're saying that happened. But I don't believe it.
Yeah, I do know there are military abductions. I do know the MyLabs are real. I do know the psychotronic interface is real. And it depends on the person. I think you can look at them and do an analysis on this. And I think there are a lot of mind games being played. And it's true. It is given to you according to your beliefs. And people can have delusions and this, that, and the other. But when you're interconnected with certain technology, it can create that. So I have to look at the person from person to person and do an analysis on each one. But, yeah, nowadays, I think everybody and their mother is looking for a reason to be a contactee or an abductee. And I think that it's getting more cookie cutter. You know, it's just kind of getting out of control where, you know, yeah, I did that and I saw this and, you know, copycat kind of things. So you do have to look at it with a little more scrutiny. But, yeah, I found it interesting.
Not only that, but a lot of people who recall being contacted do so through hypnosis. And there Correct. May well be suggestions in the hypnosis that leads them into thinking that's what happened.
Agreed. I totally agree with that. Yeah, that people plant seeds on that level, or they can, not all the time. Yeah, if it's real time, like where I've been with Interface, oh, no, there's no sleeps there. Yeah, it just depends on the person. And if they're in a waking state of mind or if they're just resting, and, yeah, it makes a whole different scenario there. Very interesting. But, yeah, well, they're trying to – I think we talked about that before, but the whole idea behind what's happening with D.C. now is controlling the narrative behind UFOs, contactees, and anything else. So we'll see where that ends up with their PSYOP. Because it's going to get more enhanced, in my opinion. You know, they're just going to be playing with more and more of their toys and confusing the masses.
Well, that's what really upsets me the most is that it's like with World War II. They sprayed LSD in the subway systems to see how it would affect crowds of people.
Wow, and they sprayed it?
Yeah, they sprayed
it. Was it LSD?
Holy LSD.
Cow. Wow, and that would put everybody in Disneyland. My goodness.
Well, it's crazy. I mean, the panic that ensued convinced them to not do it again.
Well, I remember that I heard a lot of stories that they were experimenting with LSD back in the day. I thought it was more, I was thinking it was water, you know, contaminating water with that, but I don't know. Maybe I was thinking about something else. But, yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all. Not at all. And that opens the DNA. That's why I think the LSD was such a weapon of choice. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, the subway system was something that really did happen. And I think that the government on occasion does experiment on society without permission and doesn't even blink.
No, they don't care.
You know, it bothers me.
Well, it should bother everybody, but what they don't know won't kill them. Well, actually, what they don't know will kill them. But most people have no clue. I mean, something like that, even something where the atmosphere is being contaminated or weaponized is kind of above their heads. If you get hardcore wired into programs like where I've been with interconnection technology, that's like something that should be in another universe. I mean, and it's amazing, but people just don't get it. And I think that they would never be able to handle, a lot of people wouldn't be able to handle some of that stuff. But, yeah, they've been experimenting on people for a long time, and now we have a very interesting group of people in the military now who I guess think they're part of a breakaway. So, you know, they're just going full speed ahead in their own agenda. We'll see where that winds up. You know, the changing the name to UAP, I think, is a huge red flag. And I think that that's controlling a narrative and trying to imprint the society with something that they want to control with their version of how they describe it versus, I still say UFO just to be a, you know, oil and water kind of conflict because I don't want to be part of the narrative.
Well, I agree. And I think, you know, the book Ken and I did that came out before Roswell, and the reason that we started with Roswell was that up to Roswell, you kind of got clean reports. After that, there was the government trying to say, no, this didn't happen. And then the government was actually some of the UFOs. And yeah, you know, it just got worse and worse and worse and worse. And now, you just don't know. Those objects that they shot down that were metallic metal octagon shapes, haven't heard a thing about that.
Right. Well, I think that if you talk to some of the people, I just noticed an interview with one of these ex-FBI people, and, you know, if everybody thinks that they're all credible because they work in those agencies, I'm sorry, they're designed to lie to the masses, and they might give you a little bit of tidbit of data here and there, but 90% of the data is going to be skewed. So it's like, oh, well, this person's with the military, and they've got a clearance, and they're telling the truth. I'm like, are you kidding me? That's when you're going to get the disinformation and the scrambling of information. You think for 1 minute they're going to blow their cover and their clearance for you? It's not going to happen. So it's really interesting to see. And like I said, I take what they say with a grain of salt, especially after where I've been, and do my own analysis. And I think we have way more information on a cosmic scale than they would ever access, even with their clearances. So, but yeah, to me, it just seems like a psy war. It's just a light show in the skies. And I this is what bothers me the most, Barbara. I track the weather patterns here, and we've talked about this probably, but we get snow every day now, every single day. We're in late March, almost April. And sure, I'm in the mountains. And sure, yeah, okay. But I'm telling you, I watch these guys see the skies. I see the plumes. I see what they're doing. And within 24 hours, there it is. Temperature drops, snow or rain. Every single time. You tell me that's not a weather war? Of course it is.
Oh, geez,
and the sun was out early this morning. It's like, I don't even see the sun anymore. And my relationship to the sun is just like, I love to be powered up by that light, you know, and the energy. And it's just infuriating to me to not see a sunlight anymore. It's like you never see the skies anymore, the real skies. You can't see twilight. And you can't see anything. It's all obscured. So you don't know half the traffic that's going on out there, most of which is probably Space Force at this point.
Oh, yeah. Well, when I was 8, 9 years old, we lived in Minnesota. And we saw the Northern Lights on a pretty regular basis.
Mm.
And now, now you can't. You know, the skies are so are so full of crap, and you know, it's so sad. I used to like to watch the stars. I can't find a place where there's a night sky, you know, anymore that I can actually see the stars.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Well, that's why I moved up here, was to get away from everything in the city, and it is beautiful at night, and you can see the stars, but now they put a flight path over the house, and now it's all planes. They completely went above and beyond to destroy the atmosphere up here. So, you know, I'm not kidding you. It's like every 3 minutes a plane is coming by. And I've complained to the FAA so many times, it's not even funny. But, yeah, it totally takes away the beauty, the energy, state of consciousness. Whatever you're looking at on a higher level, your divinity gets scrambled by crap. It's just disgusting. Uh-huh. It really is.
No, it does. It does make you wonder. I think, you know, we used to look at the pictures of the smog in China and Japan, and we don't realize that it's here. You know, it makes sense here to wear a mask because, you know, there's stuff in the air. Forget viruses and stuff like that. There's other crap in the air that hopefully a mask would help to sort of filter out. I'm so allergic to the pollen that it's not funny. The last 3 days, the pollen has been 11 and 12 out of 12.
Mm, wow. Wow,
and
that's huge.
It's kind of like I look outside and I start to sneeze. But it's really, it's been horrendous. And, you know, I'm used to being outside working in the gardens and stuff like that. I'm now allergic to the sun because we don't have the filter in our atmosphere anymore, and I'm allergic to the sun. So the sun hits my skin and it starts to tingle.
Really? That's strange.
Yeah.
Wow.
I'm
especially
weird
for beings like you. No, you're not weird. I think it's environmental weaponization though. And like I said, I've noticed even with the geoengineering and the weaponization that they've been doing with the weather wars, my nose is always getting congested when they spray. I've tracked it, so I know it's them. So, yeah, every single time I turn around, if they're spraying, because what goes up must come down. And sure enough, between the rain and the snow, which we're getting snow, just to give you an idea, it's like 14 degrees right now. I've never seen it so cold, and it's all weaponized. So they sit there and they tell you that this is global warming. Now they're doing it, they're engineering it, they're weaponizing it, and, you know, it is what it is at this point, but it's definitely not very healthy. And I miss the sun. I miss that beautiful light. I see it maybe for 10 minutes a day. It's like being in a prison, and all of a sudden it's gone. It's gone. And I watch these jets, and they almost look automated. I mean, I've been tracking these guys for a couple of years now, and I'm telling you, their jets look like there's no pilot. So either they're not driving or just sitting there picking whatever, and something else is piloting for them or something else is going on.
Did you see what they just released? oh, gosh, I don't know exactly when, but they have released a submarine that is automated, that does not need to have a human behind it, that can patrol the seas on its own patrol without having any direction, you know, by a human, whatever.
Oh, great.
Well,
you're wrong. Especially the mechanical jaws.
Well,
right?
We released that, and we had agreed to not release anything that didn't have a human operator. And, of course, we released it. It can go for, I think it said, 90 days without having to come back to be refueled or recharged or whatever.
Mm.
And they released that
just
as the Russians released one that was similar, except theirs carries a nuclear bomb.
That's what I thought. That's that one that's really badass. I forget the name of it. But, yeah, I heard about theirs. How interesting. Well, I'm sure we're nuclear, too, right? We have to be.
No.
The one they
they didn't say that it could carry a weapon. They just said it was a patrol.
Oh, bull. It has to be loaded with something. I'm not buying that.
Yeah, I was going to say it may well have a nuclear weapon on it as well. They just weren't telling us. So,
Right.
So,
of course,
you know,
under classification, national security, yeah.
These automated drones could easily start World War III, except we're already in it, you know.
It's World War IV, yeah. I mean, also, they can be hacked remotely very easily, too, and unless you have a really good firewall, a really good hacker, a really good electronic warfare expert can hack the drone and get it reconfigured, and all of a sudden, your whole fleet of drones is down, or they're being reconfigured and working for the other guy. So
I think it depends
on how good our military is.
Well, and, you know, when it comes to the Foo Fighters in World War II, I swear to you they were drones of some sort.
Mm-hmm. Yep, plasma drones is what I think they were, intelligently controlled. But, yeah, definitely interesting. Yeah,
yeah, because they never really spotted, other than the lights, they never spotted, at least I don't believe they did, they never spotted a solid anything.
Right.
So it was almost like, and the analogy came to me the other night when I was playing with my cats in the laser beam. And you know, the cats were all over trying to chase this laser beam, but there was nothing there. And you know, before I killed my cats, you know, I thought this is exactly what happened with the fighters. There was somebody with, not a laser beam, but something similar that could holographically, you know, shoot the light to reflect off a cloud or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
That's what our fighters saw.
Highly possible. Well, yeah, lasers, SDI went and morphed into another classified project, but you have all kinds of weapon systems with what you're describing would be kind of a laser technology to some degree. Yeah, I could see that. Definitely could see that. Another, I see them as plasma, too. And like I said, I had relatives that were in World War II, and I never got to talk to them because they passed away. But I would be, one was a fighter pilot who flew, like, to Germany, like 49 missions to Germany. But I'm sure he would have interacted with something. I would have loved to have asked him if he had noticed. I'm sure he might have noticed something. He must have. 49 missions must have seen something. But I would think so, too. Yeah.
Well, Jeannie's father was one of the guards at Area 51.
Oh, yeah.
right up to the day he died, she tried to get something out of him, and he just smiled at her and winked.
Oh, yeah, they can't say anything. They can't say a word. And a lot of the time, their security there is just, like, Whack and Nut anyway, or Whack and Hut. It used to be. I don't know. That's kind of embarrassing. I don't know what they're using now. But it was overseen by the CIA. It was a national security site overseen by the CIA, if I'm not mistaken. I don't know if the Air Force took it back or not. It's interesting. He couldn't say anything. I mean, these guys basically are going to get taken out or worse or lose their clearance, whatever.
Oh,
they
he
say
was
a
dying
word.
Of cancer. I mean, what could they do to him?
Not much.
But
yeah. Well, there's some people that do leak data, although it's like a few people here and there will open, they'll give you kind of a hint, like an inkling that you're on the right path, but they won't say anything. They can't give you any more details. So I've noticed that.
Mary Joyce had a thing on her website, Skyships Over Cashiers, about an army guy that was put out in the desert to maintain something out there, and he was told, you know, there are aliens that live in the mountains that are in the caves there, and they are very humanoid, but they will come out, but, you know, don't talk to them because, you know, you don't. And apparently the women, I know where it was in the desert near Las Vegas, and apparently the women liked to order clothing and go into Las Vegas and just mix and mingle.
That's interesting. They live in an underground base somewhere? I mean, it almost sounds like personality.
Yeah.
If you get broken away from the mainstream, you become more extraterrestrial just because you're not part of the collective anymore.
Yeah, well, no, they did live in bases that were in the mountains there, but they did come out from time to time, and he did see them. They would bring children out to play and stuff like that, and he was told not to interact with them, and he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
But they were definitely there, and it was a fascinating interview.
Oh, I bet.
So
yeah. Sounds very interesting.
Well, she gets great stuff. She really does.
She does. She always does. Yeah. That's very cool. Well, like I said, there's so many worlds existing simultaneously. It's kind of like, if people were to understand what was really going on with advanced technology, they would be mind blown. I don't think they'll ever catch up to that because they don't want the masses to know what they're doing. So, you know, those of us who kind of get an inkling of what's happening here are definitely in between spaces of where we're supposed to be on the timeline.
Well, what gets me is that there's all that technology out there, and everybody on the Earth right about now is being, put under a great deal of stress because of raising money. Everything is raising in prices. I mean, you almost can't survive, and yet they have the
tools
and the technology and everything that could make life so much easier for all of us. And, we have
so true.
People breaking into our country right, left, up, and down. And because this is supposed to be the place where the streets are gold. And, I don't know why they would want to come here, except, you know, if they're coming from a worse place, I guess that would be why. But, I mean... I just how are we to be expected to take care of them, and then we're sending trillions of dollars to the Ukraine when there's a town here in this country that's just been poisoned to death.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Priorities are way off. It does definitely need to be reset. There's no doubt about it. But reset beyond any configuration that we currently have. So, you know, I'd like to see the stuff in Antarctica released. I told you that before, beyond Antarctica and the jump points there. And I find that once we really take down the veil, the real veil that's been keeping a barrier between these two different areas from the, if you're going south, you're going to Antarctica and beyond, I find that that's a sequence to where we need to be doing. And so far as, you know, if they want to do a mass extermination here, which is what it sounds like to me, they want to get rid of the people at the ground level, which means everybody here is a mass collective, just kind of get them eradicated and put them in the most horrible position possible, and then eventually just consider them collateral damage while they play their war games with their advanced weapons systems. I think that's really what they're looking at. But for a lot of us, we don't belong here, and we're in the middle of the crossfire, so that's not acceptable. Something's got to give.
No, I agree with you. I think that there is absolutely no I mean, when you think of our founding fathers and taking care of the people here, and of course then we went and we destroyed Indians, so that, you know, we didn't do too well either. But you know, there's something going on here that no one is paying attention to the normal people. And the normal people are the ones that are suffering the most, and the normal people are and then I forget the number, but there's a whole bunch of Chinese people who are now being brought into the country. Why?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really interesting, isn't it? They're all shaking hands over the table, apparently. Yeah, well, you know, the whole idea is a free-for-all. They never wanted America to be independent. They want everybody to be one flavor of something, you know, in my opinion. But I still think it's more about everyone's collateral damage at the linear scale, and then those who are part of the breakaways are going to go into a different space-time. I mean, that's just my perspective on it. I'm not planning on being part of this game board, though.
No, I'm not either. But, you know, I'm okay if the proletariat, all these people that the rules don't mean anything to, I'm fine with them if they want to go off-planet. It's only a one-way ticket, though. You know, I wouldn't give them enough gas to get back here.
I want to leave. I want to get off-planet. I don't want them following me.
Well, the thing is,
I think the controllers, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, I don't want to be with them. Put me someplace that, you know, is quiet and peaceful. I mean, I don't know how.
Right.
I may have 25 years left or so, but, you know, when I look at what's going on in the country today, it's horrifying to me. And I just can't imagine, and it happens so fast. I mean,
it did. It happened. Yeah, after the shutdown, I think it was expedited. Yeah.
It just, and yet people seem to think that the rules don't apply to them. And I'm not just talking about politicians and stuff. My condominium complex has 14 units in it. And there's one lady in here that doesn't think that the rules apply to her. I mean, and to the extent that she hasn't paid her dues, her HOA dues, for 8 months. And
wow. As far as it'll kick her out.
Well, you'd think that would be easy, but it's not, because she owns the building. She owns her condo.
Oh.
We own the outside of it, but we don't own the inside of it. And renting is not allowed, and she's been renting it for 2 years. We finally have a lawsuit going on against her, but I don't believe she has any intention of paying or moving or anything.
Wow.
And
that's interesting.
It's almost like the rules don't apply to her. And she has tons of LLCs all over the place, but she only claims to have earned $10,000 a year, so she gets food stamps and everything for her and her seven children.
Oh,
but she
gosh.
Makes more money
seven
and is
kids?
Worth more than... Yeah.
That's insane. That's a litter.
She told...
It's not even a...
She
go ahead.
She didn't have children. She had a litter.
I know. That's exactly a litter. Yep.
Yeah. And she lies, and it does, and the rules don't apply to her. She has no, you know. I finally got to the point where I said, I don't know why it took so long for this to sink into my head. Rules are fabulous if people are honest and they live by the rules.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're not honest, they don't live by them, and you can't make them.
Mm-hmm. Right. That's the whole problem. It's corruption everywhere from A to Z. doesn't matter what level, what, you know, political position, whether it's just regular Joe or somebody in D.C., it's all corrupted.
Yeah. I mean, we've spent $15,000 in trying to get her to pay.
Wow. Yeah, crazy. Well, the fact that they're on food stamps really bothers me. There are a lot of people that have taken advantage of that. And it's unbelievable. Yeah, well, let's just have them do it. You know, they're whipping out $100 bills along with their food stamps. What's going on here, you know?
I stood behind a lady in the grocery store one day, mink coat, long fingernails, jewelry all over her hands, with enough food on the conveyor belt to feed me for half a year. Mm-hmm. And when the total came, she handed over food stamps.
Unbelievable. Yeah, they're scammers, man. I'm telling you, they're good at it, too.
I mean, if you're going to do that, don't make such a radical difference between what you're claiming and what you are. I mean...
Right, at least look the part, right?
I'm surprised she didn't have her chauffeur come in and get the food, you know?
No kidding. Well, that's true. There's a lot of people that cry poor are not poor at all.
Yeah.
They know how to... scam.
And then there are people that really deserve help and they can't get it.
Mm-hmm.
Because they bring in $5 too much. So they can't have, you know, the Medicare and all of the stuff that they need.
Mm-hmm.
I know someone that is taking care of two elderly parents and he can't get help.
That's insane. That doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's true.
To be able to. Yeah, no, I mean, it's just amazing to me, though. It's just, the system is jacked up. It really is. And there are people who have, like I said, it's just like it's so off balance, it's not even funny anymore. So, yeah, insurance is absolutely off the rails when it comes down to it. And some of this other stuff, you have to wait until you're how many years old before you get the other, the good, I don't say it's good stuff, but I'm saying it's less expensive. That should be a given for everybody at any age. I don't think that you should have to wait until you're 65 or whatever age it is to get, was it Medicare or something?
Yes. I think.
I think they should be able to get it at any age. I think that's BS, quite honestly. That should change.
And what about what happened in France? They raised the limit for retirement?
Oh, to 100? How old now? Work until you're free. Work until you're free, Dachau. Just call it Dachau Paris. That's crazy.
Oh, wow.
How old is it? I mean, how many years old is it?
I don't know, but they had riots because of it.
Well, can you imagine? And, I mean, you're getting older. I can see if you want to keep yourself busy. I get that. But some people are tired. They're worn out. They're getting older. They just want to retire, and they can't, right? That's sickening to me.
Know,
that's a death camp, okay? That's a death camp. Work until you're free. And that was the motto. And that's why I say Dachau, because that's what they was, work until you're free. Well, what do you think people have been doing? And everything's a concentration camp right now. You work until you're free. You work until you're free. You don't have to be in a concentration camp. You are a concentration camp. Sorry. It's true.
Well, you know, it's. I was forced into retirement in my 40s. But
that's all right.
I don't think I have ever worked harder in my life since I retired.
Is that right? No?
My goodness. I've been working... doing the metaphysical work and, you know, everything connected with that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, the radio shows and reading a book a week and then writing books and then Mark turned out to be the best bookie ever. He booked me into 21 shows to interview for the book.
Wonderful.
Yeah, but when you do four a week or five a week, it gets tiring.
Oh, I know. Yeah, but you know what? You're doing it independently, and I think that it beats being working for other people. Having to show up in an office for somebody you really don't like and being around people you really don't like just to put up with it for a paycheck is really in my opinion, is a bad idea. I believe in entrepreneurs, and it's really rough.
Oh, yeah.
So even if you're retired, you're doing everything, but you're at your own pace. I mean, even if you're busy, you're working for yourself. Versus having to go in it and sit there and hang out with a boss. So I think that's a perk.
No, I taught school for 25 years, so I did the,
yeah, so
the day-to-day
the
grind. But it just, but I think you're right. If it's for yourself, it's work and you're still tired. But, mm-hmm. you know, it's something that fuels you on another level, not necessarily monetary, because
right.
I don't get paid for any of this stuff, but mm-hmm. but it still makes me feel richer, because the only person that benefits is me, and of course whoever does the show mm-hmm. with me and stuff like that. But it used to be when I started doing the interviews, gosh, I don't know how many years ago that was, but let's say, oh, wow. Let's say 10 years. When I started doing interviews on the show, you know, for authors that had written books, at that time, I would, you know, talk to an author and ask them to do an interview, and he'd say, you know, I'd love to, but how much is it going to cost me? They used to pay you to be on your show.
Good grief.
Yeah. Now, if that had fit,
I've never
if that,
that
had kept going. Well, no, I didn't mm-hmm. either. I said, you know.
That's like bribing people. I'll give you $50 if you come on my show.
No, it's the other
way
around.
Yeah, I think everybody
would
be broke. I mean,
please, let me be on your show so the world can hear about my book, you know, but. And they were doing it. They were paying, I don't
mm-hmm.
know, $20, $25, whatever it was.
That's ridiculous. I would never pay anybody to be on my show. As it is, you're giving them free advertising, and that's what I've always said. And you're getting a big audience. A lot of the time you get a good audience. And plus there's replays, there's archives. I mean, the promotion alone, to put the promotion together, and you know this, it's free promotion.
Yeah.
It's free publicity, for crying out loud. You shouldn't be paying anybody to be on a show. They should be honored to be on the show, and I know that's the case. But it is interesting that they would do that.
Yeah, they really thought they had to pay to be on the show. And you know, well, I thought it was a great idea at the time. I mean, you know, I never charged anyone. it has changed, you know, and
mm-hmm.
so happily, they do it for free and I do it for free, and it works out for everybody. But
mm-hmm.
I wish there were, I know for a while there, authors stopped really wanting to do the podcast because they said, you know, they really weren't selling books through the podcasts. And
mm-hmm.
I'd love to know how they figure out if they are. I mean, do you have any way of telling if you know, you have sales that were due
selling?
To a podcast? Yeah.
I can't tell, quite honestly. I never really thought about it, but I mean, I can get my information from Amazon and they send me information. You know, they give you a percentage of how much you sell per month. And
mm-hmm.
then eventually at the end of the year, you know, with all your taxes and this, that, and the other, but it's never been a whole lot of money. So I'm not sure how that works. I think that people who are on like coast to coast or something can get a big pull when it comes down to publicity. And I think they might be able to get a lot of good book sales, but I've even heard on that level that they really don't get the sales they used to be able to get, because I think the listeners dropped on that. No pun intended, you know, no offense to coast to coast, but it's not what it used to be. So once again, I don't like the listeners as much as it used to be.
A lot of the books are offered free too. You know, you get free downloads of the books. So
yeah, Kindle. I mean, I don't know if it's free or not, but yeah, a lot of them are. And but you know what? You put it out there because you want to. I think most authors do. They put the information out because it's what they want to do. And if they make money at it, that's fabulous. But I would never, ever say you're going to make a lot of money unless you're like a Stephen King. I mean, honestly, if I had to survive off of what I made, I would never forget it, you know.
I knew a couple of people a while back that had written books and they were going to get published. And they already had their plans for retiring on the royalties and, you know, I sat there and I listened and I said, you know, you don't get rich on the royalties. You just don't. And
no,
they looked
at
me like, when my cards came out originally, I think they sold for $29. And of that, I got 20 cents.
Oh, good grief. Wow.
So
you're almost better selling them in person, like signed copies or something, you know, when it comes to books or anything else. But then you have to go and do the traveling and you have to be in places. Go ahead.
No. Now the cards will come out again, probably sometime this summer, and and I will be dealing directly with, because Ken has arranged for their republication, but I know Stephen King only gets, I think, 3 cents a book he sells, but he sells so many, and he writes so prolifically.
Hollywood movies, and you know, with that alone, once you get a screenplay going and you have it in Hollywood, I think they would make some money. Although Philip K. Dick got screwed over, from what I understand, so I don't think he made the money he was supposed to have made through a lot of his beautiful works, and according to his wife, Tessa. So, you know, I don't think he made the big money. So,
well,
yeah, I think it's just really ebb and flow.
Well, you know, I really, I didn't realize for quite a while that I was getting royalties from Kindle and stuff on Patrick's books and my book. You know, there would be, you know, $2.53, or, you know, there would little pieces of money, not huge, you know.
Mm-hmm.
When Patrick published when his books came out originally, he got royalty checks for $5,000 or $6,000 a month. He was,
well, that's nice. That's excellent.
Oh, that was way, way far in the past, because they were the only books out
still,
there
that's
on the
awesome.
Topic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think your book, Roswell, that this one you just released, I think has potential to sell quite a bit. So I wouldn't underestimate that one in royalties. And your Oracle deck and your deck that you're putting out. But
I put the cards out originally 31 years ago, and I told Kaplan, who owned U.S. Games, I said, these cards are a sleeper. It isn't time for them yet. And I think it's time.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
He had me under contract to do a handbook for them. But I put something together, and he wanted so many changes in it that I just didn't do them. And so, you know, the contract ran out after 20-some years. So, you know, it didn't happen. And I'm doing the handbook now, and I have a publisher for them. So it will come out. We're going to hold the deck back until the book is ready to go out at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's great.
So,
yeah.
So we'll see what happens then.
Mm-hmm.
It would be nice. I mean, I looked for the cards on Amazon, and they don't have them on Amazon. The only place I could find them was on ABE Books, and they wanted $200 for the deck.
Holy cow, that's ridiculous. Wow.
Yes.
I'm glad I bought mine when I did.
Well, you'll have to get a...
That's a lot.
You'll have to get one of the new decks, too, because I will make sure you get one. They're hexagon-shaped.
I like that. That's going to be cool. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I think... Yeah, I am too. Ken's getting them put into the hexagon shape, so he's doing that work. I'm writing the book, and sometime this summer it'll all come together, and then we'll see what happens.
Wonderful. Well, that's fabulous.
It's I'm looking forward to it.
But
it's funny, every time, you know, and we're putting out the poetry book again too, so...
Nice.
It's funny because I've been swearing I'm writing a book, and every time a book gets published, it's not the book I'm really talking about.
So
the Whispers Coming Out Again is not the book I'm talking about. Roswell is not the book I was talking about. Even the handbook for the deck is not the book I'm talking about. So someday I'll get a chance to actually write the book I've been talking about.
Well, you're going down checklist. Yep, I think you're doing great. You've got it all moving. That's the momentum's there, energy's there.
Now, do you have a new one coming out?
Well, I just put those two out. I mean, the one I put on the time travel, which is just, you know, before the first of the year. So not yet, but, you know, I'll be writing again. I'm putting a star map out. What I'm going to be doing, a different star map I'm going to be putting together. So that'll be something I'll be working on. It's going to take a lot of detail, though. Take some time.
That sounds fascinating.
It's going to be fun,
Now, a star map would be what?
Well, it's from a different space-time configuration. It's just my data codes of information that I've correlated that I want to put into some kind of a blueprint or a template. So I've decided to put it in a booklet. And how people digest it is how they digest it, but it means something to me. So the reason I put my work out is important to me. And if people resonate with it, that's good. So that's part of the equation. And it has a lot to do with, I always mention how we're in the wrong space-time configuration. Well, when you move to a different space-time, there's all different coordinates and different star systems and things that I can tell are there. And I want to put it down. I just want to have it there. I want to document it. So that's what I'm doing. It's not a program on the internet, you know.
I think most writers actually write for themselves.
Yeah. Yep. Well, it's important. So, you know, it's one of those things, like you, I'm sure you get that vibe that it's important for you to have certain information out. It's important for me to, as well. So it's my little time capsule among time capsules. It's kind of like a secret decoder, you know.
Well, yeah. But, you know, I think we all have a level or kind of something we want to leave behind. And, mm-hmm. you know, not that I'm making ready to exit or anything like that, but it did occur to me that when I go, someday my website will be taken down. And mm-hmm. then what of what I've written is going to be preserved.
Right.
And now with the handbook, I'm not sure about that. That has turned into a monster. But I think the book that I want to write is the 101 Spiritual Questions.
I like that.
And I'll get the 100 done, and the 101st one is, why did I write this damn book? So.
I think it's a good idea. And I like the idea that you're not going anywhere. I don't see you going anywhere. You'll be here for a while. You're one of the lighthouses.
I will be.
Yeah.
Well,
for sure.
It's so far, it's been a fun journey. I really don't. Mm-hmm. Somebody said to me one time, what do the people who follow you think of what you've done with your life so far? And I said, I'm horrified to think anybody's following me because I don't know where I'm going.
And what does it matter what they think of you anyway? Isn't that the thing, what you think of me is none of your business, or, you know?
Yeah, it's just
I think
just
you're doing fabulous.
Well, you know, it horrifies me to think that anybody's following me. Now, if they pay attention mm-hmm. to what I write and, you know, to the authors that I have on the show and to talks like you and I are having tonight, if they pay attention to that and get something from it, that's fabulous. But
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
there's only one me, there's only one you. Anybody could do exactly... You know, but anybody could do exactly what we've done to get to this point in time, and they would not be in the same place we're in.
No.
So it's kind of like, don't do what I do, you know? Follow your own path, make your own path, because mm-hmm. it's the only way you're going to get to where you have to be.
Oh, so true. Yeah, so true. I think people do eventually, but it's nice to be able, like, you have so many wonderful interviews at this network, so many people, so many great guests. I mean, I know I've taken a few from you, and of course I've interviewed you as well, and I think that that's important because people do get to hear some wonderful shows, I mean, really good shows, and that helps them on their journey.
Oh, yeah. No, I think that some of the people we've had on that I thought were, It's really funny. I tell Mark all the time, if I absolutely love a show and think it's the best show I've ever done, it doesn't archive well at all. And yet if there's a show that, you know, that I wasn't too terribly impressed with, it's in the thousands. So, you know, I'm the kiss of death. You know, if I like a show, it's not going anywhere. but but you're right. I mean, I think we have over 700 shows that we've put up so far. And I said to Mark the other day, I think we should really go through all the shows that we've done and categorize them so that we can show people how extremely varied the shows are. I mean, they're not just on one topic. They go, you know, from UFOs to unicorns and everything in between. We've hit just about every topic there is, except politics.
Oh, don't go there. It's too toxic.
I mean, we talk religion, but we don't talk politics. And
I wouldn't bother with it, honestly.
Well, no, I think there are so many people that have so much to share and so much to say, and schools just aren't doing their job anymore. I mean, at all.
Right. Yeah.
And
yeah, it's like the Alexandrian archives. I mean, you know, seriously, it's like knowledge is gnosis. You have to go look for it. You're never going to find it in mainstream education. That goes for colleges. Even these really nice so-called elite colleges are nothing. It's a club, basically.
No.
Get you more money, but that's it.
Well, yeah, and that's what gets me. It's kind of like, you look at, I mean, I have one grandchild in college and one who's looking at colleges, and I'm thinking, I know they're going to spend $100,000 easy a year on these kids for colleges, and it will get them a better paycheck at some point in time, maybe. But what have they learned? They haven't learned anything.
And
when I think of, I did the 4 years in college and I did 2 master's degrees, and nothing I learned in any of those places prepared me for doing what I'm doing today or gave me anything. Nothing that I learned in college, nothing has helped me to build a better life or a greater philosophy or reaching, I mean, nothing. And it was just such a waste of money. And yet, I wouldn't be where I am today if I hadn't had what I had. So, you know, it's
stepping stone.
It's pathetic. I think the only thing in high school I learned was I took mechanical drawing, architectural design. And what I learned in those 2 classes in high school enabled me to paint the mandalas that became the Cosmic Deck.
Very cool.
And the only reason I took those 2 classes was because that's where the boys were.
Oh, that's funny.
I was the only girl there.
That's great.
I learned how to use a compass and a ruler, you know, and that's where it all came from. But when you look at people today, my son, he went to law school and he's a lawyer, so I guess that paid off for him. But as far as the 4 years of college, not so much. It just gave him the foundation to go into law school. He had to have 4 years of college before he could go into law school.
Right, yeah, that's the whole idea. That's kind of like a club thing. It really is. It's a piece of paper gets you into another area so you can make some money. But definitely when there's a bigger scenery and a multiverse, the world is a very different place when you look at it from a different configuration of your mind. And it's not what it's cracked up to be with the linear educations at all. So people are in for a shock, and I think that's why they live in their little worlds and they stay in that little linear realm where it's safe. It's a safe space for them, and they don't want to navigate in between timelines or anything else or go into a different state of consciousness to expand because it's safe where they're at. But it's also a facade to some degree.
Well, look what's happened, you know, because of the shutdown. We finally have numbers out there proving how far behind our children are in reading and arithmetic. And, you know, both of those aspects, parents could teach their children.
Sure. Don't you remember flashcards, for crying out loud? I know you do. You're a teacher.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those?
But
I mean, come on. You can have those at home.
My son, we used to play, you know, the sound game as far as the letters and what they sounded like. He was reading at, I think four.
Yep.
You know, he was, you know, before he went to school, he could read because yep. that's what we did. We played with letters and numbers and, you know, so I think that.
I was reading at 4 years old too. Yeah. I was walking around reading books, reading adult books.
I think the greatest.
Before I even showed up.
One of the greatest, not the greatest, but well, no, maybe it is one of the greatest. One of the greatest gifts you can give your child is the joy of reading, because
mm-hmm. yeah.
it you know, it opens worlds to them, and you know, I guess I have to take back. I didn't learn anything at school. I read voraciously. I love reading.
Mm-hmm.
I just,
that's awesome.
You know, if it's a 500 or 600 page book, I salivate because I know it'll keep me going for a couple of days.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and so, you know, the joy of reading, the love of reading is something that I think, you know, if you can instill that in your child, that you've opened worlds to them, they're going to be able to learn whatever they, you know, they're going to be able to learn whatever they need to learn. They'll be able to teach themselves. And, you know, it's, and I would take away cell phones from every child.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, they all need a cell phone.
No, they don't.
You
know, we used to have beepers.
I could see for emergency or something, but no, they don't need them.
No, and they spend so much time on them. And I have to admit, I do too.
I don't spend much time on mine at all.
Well, it mine beeps at me every time there's a message or something, and
it'll drive me up the wall.
No, I now leave it under a pillow. You know, I figure I will check it in the morning and at evening, and that's it. And if anything, you know, crucial has happened, mm-hmm. somebody can pick up the phone.
Right.
But,
yeah, there's no telephone line. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, there. It's just that when I think of what. I know, you know, and sooner or later they're going to want to put implants into us. And, you know, I'm old enough mm-hmm. to say, nope, I'm not doing that.
Well, I've already been interconnected with stuff. So, yeah, I really, their version of AT&T in your head probably isn't the best solution to the equation. Yeah.
No.
Think about it.
I mean, the earbuds mm-hmm. are bad enough. But you know, I look at the technology that's coming out, and I'm thinking, we're just nanometers away from the chip inside of us that's going to see.
Yeah, it's all interface.
And,
I don't think they'll need a chip. They'll just be signal driven anyway. I mean, if they go the route where I've been, there's no chip involved. You don't need chips. I think that's where they're heading. Yeah, definitely. I'm not sure though. At what point they may have a smaller collective for that. Who knows where they're heading with this crazy on this world right now, but interesting.
Well, I think we'll be around to see it. I think within the next 20 years, there's going to be a lot of very fascinating things going on.
Gosh.
Hopefully,
I won't recognize this place in 20 years.
No. Well, welcome to my world, too.
May not even be any people here anymore 20 years from now. You may not see one person on this world.
I might like that.
I know.
You know, so long as there's at least one gas station and one grocery store open, I'll be fine.
There you go.
But you look at, you know, it's kind of like, I'm curious to see where it's going, and I'm fearful of where it's going. But, you know, who would have thought it was at this point I mean, 10 years ago, I wouldn't have been able to have predicted 10 years in advance. I know my predictions for this year on the website, a lot of them have happened already. And we're not even mm-hmm. halfway through.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be very interesting to see what happens the second half of the year.
We're moving right along, too. We're almost at April.
Yeah, no, it's going so fast. It feels like time is speeding up, and I don't know if when I was younger it just felt more lackadaisical, or mm-hmm. if my getting older, I'm perceiving it as going faster. I'm not sure which is appropriate, but whichever one it is, it feels like time is going faster.
It's frequency more than life plane that's creating that speed, in my opinion. But yeah, I felt a little stagnant this past year, and then it shifted a little bit. I think it has a lot to do with some of the stuff they're doing in the aerial warfare. But yeah, there's definitely some stuff happening, moving energetically.
One of the things that came out in the stuff that I was writing for the book was something interesting. It basically said that at the time of the solstices, the energetic shifting is going to be more profound than it ever has been before. So those times of the year, it's going to be a smart idea to be gentle with yourself and kick back a little bit, because the element of being out of balance internally is going to be more extreme, because the energy shift is going to be greater.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense.
That makes sense to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
After I wrote it, I thought, well, that's an interesting, you know. when I do this stuff, it's all channeled. So,
right.
You know, I'm reading along as I'm writing it. And every now and then I'll back off and say, huh, well, that's unusual.
That's good, though. I like that aspect of, I call it streaming nowadays. I guess it was channeling in the old days. I think we're just streaming data now.
Yeah, that's quite possibly it. I mean, there was one place where I talked about an aspect for one of the cards was that it was appropriate and important for changing jobs and doing unique things and, you know, allowing yourself to celebrate the child within. And then in parentheses I wrote, but joining the circus is not an option. So.
Oh, that's good. That's really good.
No, there's some good stuff in there.
Here.
Sounds
great.
Well, you know, it's fun to a degree, but, you know, each card is a lengthy write, and then you get to the next card, and you're hitting the same qualities again but from a different viewpoint. So it has been a challenge. I've put off a couple of readings because I don't want to get people mixed into what I'm writing for the book, so...
Right. That makes sense.
Oh, yeah. But the cool thing about it is it's stretching me unbelievably. So, you know, to do readings after I'm done with it is going to be very interesting, because there's so much more profound stuff that seem to be more to the fore in my consciousness than they have been before. So
I
think
that's good.
At one point, I was talking about something, and I said, you know, it's all right to reach for the stars. Who knows? You may catch one.
Oh, absolutely. That's great. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I think when I send it to you, I think you'll have fun with it.
Oh, yeah.
I hope.
Looking forward to it. Oh, I will. Looking forward to that. Yeah.
You may not say that when you're done, but...
I'll let you know.
Okay.
I'm sure it'll be fine.
But you know, back to mummies.
Or squirrels, whichever one you want to talk about.
Squirrel.
Squirrel.
No, I just noticed it on the screen that that's where we were starting. I think you're right in your saying that the Egyptians may well have been copying something they saw and not know why.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Because the Apis bulls were mummified as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, why would they do that? I realize that the bulls were sacred.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they were meant for the bull dancing. They weren't meant for killing like bullfights. But I think it's sort of like we put people in boxes and put them underground, and that's our ritual, and there's no point to it. Cremation is you know, a lot smarter.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
Yeah,
it's more for the emotional, I think it's the emotional release and healing of the people that are going to miss the person, the burial,
uh-huh.
you know, funerals, that sort of thing. But, yeah, it just strikes me as, you know, when you look at extraterrestrial intelligence and design, first of all, I think it was a lot of sentient machine energies connected in back in the day, and or forward, I should say. But that appeals, and also I find that stasis comes to mind. In other words, it reminds me of the Halls of Amenti. He wasn't really dead, but he was projecting himself into other multiverses. I think they were definitely trying to perhaps replicate a mystery school teaching or something, but maybe going in a very, very different fashion.
That's right. He was in hibernation, like he was
correct.
So that his body would, well, of course, he was also eternal. So, you know, he wasn't mm-hmm. going to age or anything anyhow, but he went out of body in order to do the traveling. So they
mm-hmm. yeah.
protected his. So that's what Indians do when they do the mission quest. You know, somebody has to watch over the body, and the ayahuasca is the same thing. Someone has to watch over mm-hmm. the body while the spirit is out
right.
celebrating or doing whatever it's going to be doing.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe they just misinterpreted it, and maybe the box concept may have been some sort of portal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't know, unit for transmitting the body, and you know,
mm-hmm.
most of the cases, there were granite parts to this stuff, so that
mm-hmm.
you know, if it was in some sort of a chamber that would take you down to molecules and send the molecules someplace else, that you know,
mm-hmm.
maybe it was a beam of some sort, a way of projecting yourself into another dimension, reality, or whatever. And
mm-hmm.
they just misinterpreted. All they saw was, you know, the going in and the coming out. They didn't understand what was going on inside.
Yes, I agree with that part. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's very interesting.
Well, it's kind
yeah,
of
yeah,
like,
you, hold
you know,
perspective.
It's kind of like the, is it the Patagonia islands where they made ships that, you know, to not ships, but airplanes to, you know, ask the airplanes to come back and bring all of their treasures with them, that they thought that if they made the airships and pretended to worship them, that they would come back, because during the war they built, you know, airstrips on those islands and...
Mm-hmm.
And they brought food and all sorts of stuff in, and then they were gone. Maybe it's the
mm-hmm.
same type of thing with the Egyptians, only
mm-hmm.
only the Egyptians took it a little further than the other people did. Just
mm-hmm.
recognize our time. Want to give out where your shows are so people know where to find you?
Oh, sure. Well, thank you. This has been a wonderful show, as always, Barbara, so thank you. I'm at Hyperspace on KCOR, 12 midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific on Fridays. And Raven Stars Witching Hour on Saturdays, 12 midnight Eastern Time, 9 p.m. Pacific. And, yeah, this has been a wonderful show. I always look forward to our beautiful moments of philosophizing about what's going on here.
Yeah, well, we did return to our start, which was not a bad thing.
We did. All right.
But thanks
nice.
So much. I'm so your show is always wonderful, and I always have such a great time with it. It's
well, you make
so
it, too, so thank you.
Well, it takes two, you know,
right.
just sitting.
Good chemistry.
Just sitting, giving a monologue is not as much fun as hearing a dialogue.
Oh, it's not. I remember when I first started that, and I'm so grateful that you're here. It's fun. Thank you.
I did that, too. Okay, well, I will talk to you soon. Thanks so much for being here, and
thanks.
I will talk to you again soon, probably.
Thank you. My pleasure.
Thank you. Good night now. Good night, everybody. Check in with us next week. Another good show coming up. And do check the calendar, because there are other shows in there, too. And look forward to hearing and seeing you. And Have a great night and stay safe. The weather is crazy. You know, take an umbrella and rubbers wherever you go these days. Good night now.